First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Help is on the way to address the national shortage in baby formula. Good morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. We're live from Studio 5, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening to First Coast Connect this morning. And just ahead, what local experts want you to know about how to take care of your children right now. If you're one of them or you have questions about this, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later, we profile popular local chef Dennis Chan in today's First Coast Success. That's later. But first this hour, a military plane carrying enough specialty infant formula for more than 500,000 baby bottles arrived Sunday in Indianapolis. It's the first of several flights expected from Europe aimed to relieve a shortage that has sent parents scrambling to find enough formula to feed their children. President Joe Biden authorized the use of Air Force planes for the effort. It's dubbed Operation Fly Formula because no commercial flights were available. Now, at the same time, local health officials are mobilizing to respond to the crisis. They're working to get parents information and guidance. There will be a webinar later this week you can click on to. We'll tell you about that in a little bit. But first, let's welcome Dr. Jeffrey Goldhagen, Medical Director with the Partnership for Child Health. Hi, Dr. Goldhagen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Good to be with you. Also on the line, Elizabeth Bobo, the Children's Health Clinical Dietitian Lead at Nemours. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. And here's our question to callers. Have you been following the baby formula shortage? What are your questions? Are you a parent of a baby that needs formula? Have you had any trouble finding formula or not? We want to hear from you. Give us a call. It's 549-2937, 549-2937. Join us. Emails at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInjax and Facebook always open. Let's begin with you, Dr. Jeff Goldhagen. This is welcome news that literally almost like a Berlin airlift of baby formula is coming into this country to give parents some relief. What are you hearing from parents out there about the shortage? I've heard mixed commentary. Some parents I've heard have had trouble finding formula. Some haven't.
Right. Well, it is mixed, but there certainly is a shortage of formula out there. What we urge parents to do is to follow the directions, primarily from the American Academy of Pediatrics, which you can find on our website, Partnership for Child Health. And there are a number of suggestions on that website about what substitutions parents can make. WIC now is expanding so that you can get formula from multiple different manufacturers. So where in the past you could only use one manufacturer. There are some recommendations as to, for instance, and Elizabeth can talk in more detail, For infants 6 months and older, in the short term, parents can substitute cow's milk, but that's only for a week or so to allow them to find other sources of formula. And it's tough, and there's nothing more natural, more instinctive than a parent wanting to feed their child. There are multiple suggestions on the website, and families just need to persevere. This is going to last for another 2 months or so, and that initial shipment was actually for hypoallergenic formula, not general formula. So we're in this for the medium term, for at least the next 4 to 8 weeks.
Okay, that's important information to know. Elizabeth Bobo with Nemours. Parents are desperate. Some of them, they're trying to create their own formula or trying giving their babies other types of food. What are some of the mistakes parents are making, and what do you advise that they do?
Well, you bring up a really good point about making their own formula. That is something that we are strongly opposed to. That is very dangerous because homemade formulas are not nutritionally complete, and they can actually lead to some very serious nutrient deficiencies in infancy, such as low calcium levels. And there have been some reports of infant hospitalizations due to parents making their own formulas. So we recognize that this is a hot topic on the internet, and parents are looking at this, but we strongly discourage it. Another thing that we see parents doing that we advise against is diluting the infant formula, trying to make it stretch by watering it down. And while, you know, you understand the reason that parents would do that, the reason that that's a concern is because you're also diluting out the nutrients provided by the formula. And when you do that, you can cause some nutrient deficiencies and specifically also electrolyte deficiencies. For example, sodium levels may be insufficient, and that can cause some very serious health consequences for an infant as well. Plus, when you dilute the formula, it's not as satisfying. And so a baby may be upset and crying for formula more often, so then the parent having to feed more frequently, which kind of defeats the purpose. So we do strongly recommend against diluting the formula as well as making your own baby formula.
What information do you have for parents, Elizabeth, who can't find formulas, particularly parents whose child might be on a special formula?
Right. And the children with specialized formulas are particularly concerning. Here at Nemours, we work with quite a few families who have children with food allergies or gastrointestinal disorders, and they do require these specialized formulas. We recommend that these families work closely with their registered dietitian, whether it's here at Nemours or with the WIC program, which is also an excellent resource, and also work closely with their pediatrician. A lot of pediatrician offices or hospitals or centers like Nemours, we are able to get some samples of the specialized formulas that we can give out to parents who are in need, and we're happy to do that. We also work closely with medical supply companies that distribute these specialized formulas to families. So I do encourage parents not to feel like they're on their own in this, but to reach out to their healthcare partners, whether it's their child's pediatrician or registered dietitian, to help them navigate this very challenging time.
Now, Dr. Goldhagen, this formula that's being brought in from Europe kind of begs the question, why didn't the FDA do this sooner? Bring in formula from other sources before things got so bad?
Well, this is a complicated question, and it gets at really the roots of the issue, which is that this is a $2.5 billion industry that is not well regulated, and that historically it has been run by three or four companies that have lobbied the administrations over the years to delete or limit the access of families to people in the U.S. to formula from outside this country. There's almost a 20% tariff actually placed on formula that's imported from outside this country. So one of the things that this crisis is going to do, hopefully, will be to catalyze us to relook at what the regulations are, how we manage access to formula in our country, and also the issue which is the elephant in the room, which is breastfeeding. Families, women that breastfeed are obviously not having these issues. We are not a country that supports breastfeeding to any great extent, not the least of which is we're the only country amongst high-income countries that doesn't offer any parental leave, which is any paid parental leave, which is the point of time at which breastfeeding, which is, you know, can be very challenging for all mothers, a point in time at which breastfeeding is cemented and mothers actually are able to breastfeed during that period of time. And so this will catalyze a significant amount of relook at how we provide access to formula and how we provide access to nutrition, including our approaches to breastfeeding as a country. Just like to mention quickly that on the website on Partnership for Child Health, there's actually the forms that pediatricians can use to access specialty formulas from manufacturers. So please take a look at that.
We're talking about the baby formula shortage. In a moment, we'll tell you about a special webinar Nemours is hosting this week for parents. Whether you breastfed your baby, formula fed them, if you even you're not a parent at all, what are your questions about this? It's 549-2937. Well, you know, I have thoughts about breastfeeding, let me just say to both of you. I breastfed both of our kids. I received one short tutorial in the hospital after the birth of our first child. I went home with a little backpack that had formula in it, which didn't exactly encourage me to breastfeed, I must say. Breastfeeding isn't free. I had to buy a lot of equipment. The most expensive piece of equipment was a breast pump that I had to use when I went back to work. And I just want to say right now, breastfeeding my firstborn was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my entire life. It hurt a lot. It was difficult to figure out how to do it well. It was isolating. It was stressful. It was tiring. It was like flying an airplane blind, honestly. And the only reason that I kept going was because I knew how good it was for the baby, and I'm just kind of a stubborn person. And so I was determined not to let this thing beat me. I was going to make it work one way or another. But Dr. Goldhagen and Elizabeth, you know, we just don't offer women enough support. In my grandmother's day, my great-grandmother's day, a new mother was surrounded by other women in the family to help her through that time. And we don't have that anymore, Elizabeth. And so, you know, what about Dr. Goldhagen's observation that we're not giving new mothers enough support if they want to breastfeed? And let me also add, if women choose not to breastfeed, they shouldn't be judged for it. Elizabeth.
No, I agree with what you're saying about breastfeeding. I mean, you're right. As a mother myself, you think that when you have your baby, breastfeeding is just going to be the easiest, most natural thing in the world. And if you have experienced what you're talking about and what I experienced myself, you learn that sometimes it's not. Particularly if you're a working mother, it can be particularly challenging to navigate going back into the work environment and
let me just say right now, not to cut you off. I used a breast pump in the infield of the Daytona 500 during the race. Literally, I pumped breast milk during the Daytona 500 in a satellite truck in the infield. I pumped breast milk in the bathroom of First Coast News because there was no place set aside for women to do that back when I worked there. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. There are horror stories of women trying to pump in the workplace. I had a friend who was pumping in an airport, and that was a particularly horrible situation.
I pumped in airports. I've done that. Yeah, I did that.
I think it's getting better in some respects. I know that, you know, I'm fortunate in my work environment, we now have a dedicated lactation room for mothers, and it's a very comfortable space, and it's not a space where we feel like we have to hide, and it's very supported. But I recognize that that's not the norm. I do agree that we need to provide more support to our breastfeeding mothers. I also think we need to take away the stigma, though, that if you can't breastfeed, that you're doing something wrong, mm-hmm. or maybe if you need to supplement with formula. You know, I had to supplement my infants with formula while I was breastfeeding, mm-hmm. and I'm a pediatric dietitian, right? So, you know, there's no shame in that. And what we want to do at the end of the day is provide the best nutrition we can for our infants, whether that's coming from breast milk, which is ideal, particularly within the first 6 months of life. But if we need to use formula or we choose to use formula, that's okay too. The problem is that during the shortage, you know, a lot of parents are feeling very panicky because they don't have access to basic nutrition for their infants. Yeah. And that is a very scary prospect. And, you know, want to keep in mind, too, that if your baby is on a particular milk-based formula, there are other formulas that can be alternated if your baby does not have special needs. And that's okay to change the formula and work with your pediatrician and your dietitian to find something that your baby tolerates, or maybe even considering using a store brand, whereas before maybe you used more of a name brand, but during this time, a store brand would be okay if that's what you have access to. The thing is just providing ample nutrition to your infant, not diluting the formula, not skipping out on giving your baby the formula that they need and thinking they're going to get all the nutrition from maybe solid foods that they're not, and also not making your own formula. I can't stress that enough.
Absolutely right. Dr. Goldhagen.
This is really a critical issue. And it's one that really needs to be addressed through political advocacy. The fact is that this country does not respect women and doesn't respect children, doesn't respect babies. There is no support, relatively little support for breastfeeding in this country. And it's a political issue. It's an advocacy issue. And not just women, but all people with children, all people who have a stakeholder in the health and well-being of children need to make it really very clear to our politicians across the country that this is a priority issue. Now, our community, maybe 15 years ago, implemented across all hospitals a baby-friendly hospital initiative, which took the samples out of the bags that went home and advanced the support for breastfeeding in our community. It's not perfect by any means, but there is a movement for baby-friendly hospitals around the country, but relatively few hospitals around the country have actually implemented.
And in a moment, I want to hear more about what that entails. But first, let's go to some calls about the baby formula issue in America. Your thoughts about breastfeeding, too, 549-2937. Susan in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. Go ahead and turn your radio down, Susan, and let us know your thoughts.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Go ahead.
I just wanted to reinforce, I'm so glad you're talking about that, because in all of the news broadcasts, I hadn't heard anything about the value and need for support for breastfeeding. My experience was similar to yours. I was so blessed. I had a Lalechi nurse help me. She was not get paid, but she helped me tremendously with my first child. And the second child was absolutely wonderful. And they refused the bottle. They never would take a bottle. Mm. So it was
That happens sometimes.
But I was so blessed. And I think about all the women in third world countries that they've been forced to try, formula because it looks like that's the only way that you get a happy baby. And then babies die from that. And Nestle still hasn't stopped promoting that in third world countries. So I just want to emphasize the need for advocacy that we promote taking care of our kids the best way possible for them. I don't begrudge any person who has to use the thing, but I think we make it too hard for women to see the benefit and joy that comes from breastfeeding. So I just wanted to underline your story, Melissa.
Yes, Susan, thank you so much. And it definitely wasn't joyful for me, but it was great for my kids. Thank you.
And the rest of my time really was. It was just precious. And
yes,
ended so well. It was so positive, the whole thing. So I just want to encourage women to consider that.
Absolutely.
And you do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yes, you do. You really do bond with your baby once you get over the early days of figuring out how to do it. And it is so good for them. Now, that said, I want to be very clear that there are women who choose not to and there are women who can't breastfeed. Some special needs kids have trouble latching on. Some women have health conditions that prevent them from breastfeeding. There are a number of reasons why women may not breastfeed. And as Dr. Goldhagen says, Elizabeth, we just aren't providing women enough support, no matter what they choose to do. And so, I think this discussion has morphed beyond the baby formula crisis to a larger discussion, Elizabeth, about how we just need to do a better job as a society supporting parents and children, as Dr. Goldhagen says. And there are a number of ways we could do that we aren't doing. What do you think? What would make a difference in your mind, Elizabeth? What are some easy things we could change about the way we handle this kind of transition when parents take a new baby home and they're trying to figure it out, they're trying to take care of the baby, and they're not getting a lot of support, particularly people who've moved away from extended family and they're raising kids by themselves. It's scary.
It is scary. And I agree that, you know, when a baby is born and the mother and the infant are still, you know, in the hospital, that is an optimal time to really provide some of that breastfeeding support. Most hospitals, or all hospitals, really have a lactation consultant on staff, but few people really know about that, I believe. And when the mother goes home and she's having trouble trying to nurse her baby, sometimes she just does not know where to turn, and that's where the lactation consultant is so important. But I feel like we need to highlight that more than what we're doing and provide that support to the mother. Again, WIC also has certified lactation consultants that are excellent resources for mothers to use to gain knowledge about how to appropriately breastfeed or how to pump in the workplace or at home. And they can even obtain supplies from WIC, which is super beneficial for mothers with lower socioeconomical status. So I feel like we really have to start in the very beginning when that baby is born, promoting the breastfeeding, providing contacts for the mother to reach out to. And then we also need to, in a society, make breastfeeding more acceptable. You know, I think sometimes as moms, if we're in public and we're trying to nurse our infant, maybe, you know, we're feeling a little embarrassed. Because it's not the norm in our society.
I was shamed many times, and I can't even tell you. I remember being shamed. I was at my daughter's daycare center in a room with only babies and two women that were minding the babies, and I started breastfeeding my youngest in that room, and I was covered up, and the women in the room were upset that I was doing that in this semi-private situation. It was just absolutely ridiculous. Let me go to Anne Marie in Mandarin. Anne Marie, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me on. I'm a mother of two boys, and I'm an exercise physiologist and an early interventionist. And I think with breastfeeding, the education needs to start before you have your baby. When I lived up in New York, I worked at a mother's center as well as within some of the local hospitals as a volunteer to help women who were like me trying to breastfeed their babies and have issues. I think there's too much stigma attached to women shouldn't breastfeed because that's beneath us. It's really not. And the biggest benefits come from the mother's breast milk, not from formula.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. Having that support is great.
Is important. And let me again stress, we are not in the business of judging women that choose not to breastfeed or can't breastfeed. Let me make that clear. All of that said, we're getting a lot of feedback. Here's one from Scott. The dietitian should tell people there are bad ingredients in formula like sugar and high fructose corn syrup. Here is a tweet from a listener, Lee. I had no support. They sent me home with formula even though I said I was breastfeeding. I pushed through the pain and anxiety, but I'm pleased my daughter has way more resources today. Dr. Goldhagen, if you could share what makes a baby-friendly hospital, and then we'll have Elizabeth talk about the webinar this week with Nemours.
Great. Well, baby-friendly hospital is a movement that started globally. It was late to hit the United States, but over the past 10, 15 years, they've been established. There are 10 elements to what a baby-friendly hospital actually is, one of which is not providing formula in the bags, the take-home bags that hospitals provide, one of which is actually in the hospital, eliminating to the extent possible actually use of formula and supporting women in breastfeeding. It's a critical opportunity to actually increase the incidence and prevalence of breastfeeding. Well, not as you suggested, not providing any stigma whatsoever to those women that cannot breastfeed. One of your callers actually said that the movement to advertise for formula in low-income countries. Actually, the advertising of breast milk substitutes in this country and other high and middle-income countries is as prevalent as it is in low-income countries. So there is overall the framework in this country to diminish breastfeeding and push actually for the use of formula in multiple ways that are obvious and some that are nuanced.
Almost out of time, Elizabeth, how can people join the Nemours webinar this week on this issue?
Oh, wonderful. The webinar is Tuesday, so May 24th at 6 o'clock. They can go to Nemours.org to register for this event. Advanced registration is required. But at this event, this is free, and there will be a panel of nutrition experts and pediatricians to discuss the latest available information about the baby infant formula shortage and also answer questions that parents may have. So I strongly intend everyone listening who has an interest in this to register and join the webinar at 6 o'clock on May 24th.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Bobo, Children's Health Clinical Dietitian Lead at Nemours. Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, Medical Director with the Partnership for Child Health. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Later, the MOSH celebrates Jacksonville's Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders with a new exhibit. But up next.
At an early age, I watched my family, my grandparents, my parents, my uncles and aunts, all offer great food, great service, and build great relationships with our local community.
One of the best-loved chefs in town, Dennis Chan, on his success in the restaurant world. Next.
Today's segment of First Coast Success is brought to you by First Horizon.
Well, Dennis Chan is beloved for his hip Asian comfort food, and recently he's opened a new place that's winning raves. With all the taste details on Chef Chan's culinary career, here's Karen Bruni Mathis of the Jax Daily Record. It's today's First Coast Success.
Dennis Chan is the Small Business Administration's Florida Small Business Person of the Year for 2022. He grew up in Jacksonville in a restaurant family and in 2005 started Blue Bamboo Canton Bistro. In 2018, he won the 2018 General Mills Neighborhood to Nation Recipe Contest for his Sunshine State Orange Crunch Cake. Dennis Chan, welcome to First Coast Success.
So happy to be here.
Well, you grew up in Jacksonville in your family's restaurant business. Well, not only what did you learn, but how did you learn it?
At an early age, I watched my family, my grandparents, my parents, my uncles and aunts, all offer great food, great service, and build great relationships with our local community.
And you were all over Jacksonville, correct?
Yes. 13 restaurants in my lifetime.
What's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is when I stood next to my grandfather on a little red stool while he was cooking in his professional kitchen.
How old were you?
Oh, gosh. I was probably 4 or 5 years old.
Wow. So when did you professionally enter the restaurant industry?
Well, I went to culinary school in New York, and then I worked at a restaurant in Boston called Blue Ginger, and that was in 2000.
And so that was your professional start?
Yes, that, learned a lot and fell deeper in love with this business.
And when did you come back to Jacksonville? What brought you back?
Came back to Jacksonville after managing big chain restaurants and decided I wanted to continue that family legacy.
Was there ever any question you would become a chef?
Well, when I was in college, I kept thinking I would choose a career that I could have all my colleagues come and eat at my restaurant. So I guess the answer is no. I never had any question about becoming a chef.
What was the first thing you cooked? Do you remember that you made yourself?
I probably, as a kid, you know, even though my family always made Chinese dishes, I think I probably made spaghetti and meatballs as my first dish.
They were probably really good.
I still crave them today.
Well, you started Blue Bamboo along Southside Boulevard. I think a lot of people remember that. Then you bought the larger location. That was November 2019, just months before the pandemic. But you forged on. You invested more than $2 million into renovating a former law office along San Jose Boulevard, and you opened that in January 2021. Tell us about 2020.
Well, I think 2020 probably scared my banker more than it scared me. I had confidence in our relationships that we had with our customers and our vendors, and I knew that all the experience that we had, we would be able to have support from our community and our customers.
And you have a big base of customers who followed you.
Yes. Luckily, our new location is not as far. It's not too far that people still come to us.
Well, running a restaurant is challenging, and it's more than just being a chef. It's a business. What's been your biggest challenge during the years that you've been operating?
Well, building a brand here was probably our biggest challenge. You know, although my family had a great history here, people didn't know Blue Bamboo as, you know, with that family history. And, you know, just over the years, continuing to offer good experiences, good service, and great food is, you know, that's the biggest challenge.
And you're at the restaurant all the time.
I am.
What's been your biggest success?
Our biggest success, there's probably been two. I would consider being able to nurture those relationships of those customers a big success, and growing in our community. And also building our dream restaurant last year is a big success.
What are some of the elements of that restaurant that you built into it?
Well, you know, it's a real honor to be able to build a restaurant from scratch and have everything that you want built just so that you can operate well. Our kitchen is the most efficient kitchen that I could ever imagine. Having all the right equipment, having everything placed in the right place. And we also have banquet space. And, you know, that's neat to be able to host big events.
Well, and Dennis Chan, you've been in business here a long time. How has the Jacksonville culinary landscape changed?
Well, now more than ever, Jacksonville has great sources for ingredients that we can use to create those authentic dishes. We use farms from down the street, pretty much down in Elkton, that grow our vegetables. And they are grown just like they were when my grandparents were in China.
Wow. And so you have a lot of locally sourced other ingredients here, too, do you not?
Oh, yes. And the whole landscape of Jacksonville has become so sophisticated. You can get any type of food experience you want at almost any price level.
And I know you're in your restaurant a lot. When you're not, where do you eat out?
Oh, goodness. There's so many choices. It depends on the day. You know, if I want something quick and casual, there are places for that. And if I want something that is a full evening experience, there are so many places for that, too.
Well, what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs, especially aspiring restaurateurs?
Well, people come to me a lot and ask about starting their own food business, and they all have the same strong passion for their product and for their business. But, you know, the one thing that always is the aha moment for those entrepreneurs is when you ask them how many of those items you have to make to cover your costs. And so you really have to watch the finances, and you have to check up on that and follow up on that often as your business progresses.
I know that you continue to mentor small business owners and chefs. And how are they doing? How did they do during the pandemic?
Oh, so many of them, it's that entrepreneurial spirit that carries them through. Some of them have changed their offerings. Some of them have grown their offerings. Some have found great success by shrinking their offering. And that's really what it takes, is that constant monitoring to be successful in business.
Well, what does it mean to you to be Florida's Small Business Person of the Year? And you now compete, if I'm correct, for the National Small Business Person of the Year?
Yes, there's some great competition out there, too. All 50 states qualified for that national award. But it's taken a lot of hard work to grow the trust in the community. And being named this, it's great to represent all the small businesses of Florida.
And it's brought a lot of attention, has it not?
It has. We've gotten to meet a lot of new people.
When do you find out about the national selection?
The national selection is this week. And so I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Well, what else would you like to share?
Well, we've talked a lot about community, and really that's the one thing that keeps us loving what we do. Having the people support us and just, you know, being able to help people as they need them in the community.
Well, Dennis Chan, founder of Blue Bamboo Canton Bistro and the Florida Small Business Person of the Year, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you.
Well, May marks Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And over at the Mosh, there is an exhibit, not one, but two projects by Jacksonville native and photographer Agnes Lopez, who is Filipino American. Agnes is on the line now with more about all of this. Agnes, good to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you are such a talent and part of this city's vibrant Filipino American community. As we mark AAPI Heritage Month, what are you working on at the Mosh?
Right now we have an exhibit going on called I Am Here, which is a group of Filipino women artists. They're all local, which kind of came from a original project that I worked on or started, the Panay Project, where I looked at my portfolio during the pandemic and realized I didn't have people that looked like me. So I went on a mission to photograph Filipino women in the arts, and that's the project that's currently being exhibited. And from there, I got all those artists together. We have Elena Olander, Kat Reyes, Grace Bayo, RV Witherspoon, and Danny Ray Simmons, and they're all exhibiting their artwork. And we're very excited, and we're so thankful for Mosh to have a space for us.
Everyone should go check it out. But you have a lot of other projects going on. Tell us what else is on your plate.
I do. One of my projects, I have several projects, but one was The Faces to Remember, which is ongoing. You guys have had me on before about it, but I traveled all over the United States and photographed Filipino American World War II veterans. And that project basically is, I just wanted to port black and white portrait project, and was created to keep their stories alive. And I just recently had it exhibited. CSX had me at their company to share that experience and project with them. And I also have the Jack's Filipino Chef. We've been working on a documentary for the past 4 years now, and basically we have a lot of Filipino-American chefs in the area, and we wanted to jumpstart that Filipino food movement, and it's really exciting to see that it is happening now, and you see all these new restaurants popping up, and we've are still working on that documentary. It's ongoing, and we hope to finish it probably next year.
Nice. And, you know, we have a big, diverse Asian American and Pacific Islander community in this city, and it's vibrant, it's exciting, and it's nice to be spotlighting it this month, isn't it?
Yes. All of my projects have been focused on the Filipino-American community here in Jacksonville. Jacksonville does have the largest Filipino community in the Southeast. And from doing all of this work, I realized how vast the Asian community is. And one of the projects that I'm trying to start and work on, and maybe you guys might help me, I want to work on a photo series to highlight the different Asian communities. And I am looking for people that immigrated to Jacksonville, whether it be in the 50s, 60s, or 70s, even 90s, of different Asian backgrounds, whether it's Laos, Malaysian, Indonesian, Vietnamese, Cambodian, and I would like to share and tell their stories. I'm hoping to find people to be a part of this project and be willing to be open and share what it was really like to come here and immigrate to Jacksonville.
How can people get in touch with you and be part of this?
Yes, you can email me, reach me at Agnes at agneslopez.com. And then I will also, I don't want to forget, we do have a gallery opening this Friday at Mosh. I will be there, and you can meet all the artists from the I Am Here exhibition, and that's this Friday from 5:30 to 7:30, and you also get to see the amazing dinosaur exhibition. You get a little sneak preview of that, which I was able to see it, and it is amazing. So
absolutely. Check it out at the Mosh and get in touch with photographer Agnes Lopez and be part of her project as part of AAPI Heritage Month. You're so busy, Agnes. I'm so excited for you. AgnesLopez.com. Check it out. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And it's themosh.org. Go visit that museum too. Okay. In a moment, guess what? World of Beer Bar and Kitchen is opening a new location in the city this week and returning to the area. Sound interesting? I'll tell you all about it right after this.
Currently in heavy rotation on the independent 89.9 HD4, new music from dream pop duo Beach House, indie rock bops from Wet Leg, the latest from Father John Misty, Big Thief, Mitski, and Robert Glasper. But that's just scratching the surface of what you'll hear on WJCT's new music discovery station. It's all handpicked, and it's streaming everywhere. Listen on 89.9 HD4, the WJCT app, or on jacksmusic.org.
Northeast Florida artists are making noise that's reverberating across the country, and the Jacksonville Music Experience is your ticket to the local scene. Music reviews, curated playlists, music history, concert recommendations, and profiles of local artists, all put together by our team of local contributors. The Jacksonville Music Experience plays it local and plays it loud. Visit jacksmusic.org to read and hear more.
How climate change is affecting St. Augustine and how artists are using their work to push for solutions. Join ADAPT and Flagler College for Undercurrents, Cultures of Climate Change, a conversation with local officials, subject matter experts, artists, and students. This free event at the Chris Bellart Art Museum is on Thursday, June 2nd. Reserve your seat now at wjct.org/events.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. The Notorious B.I.G. would have turned 50 over the weekend. In a new book, author Justin Tinsley explores the world that made Biggie who he was and the world Biggie left behind way too soon.
It's painful to know that we never got a chance to see Biggie Smalls in his prime, because he hadn't yet hit his prime.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, novelist Emma Straub. Her new book, This Time Tomorrow, is about a 40-year-old woman who is floating through her life and worried about her beloved ailing father. She wakes up from her birthday to find herself 16 again, back to the year 1996. Straub also owns Books Are Magic, an independent bookstore in Brooklyn, New York. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
With the Supreme Court poised to overturn Roe v. Wade next month, a fierce debate is underway about how that could complicate the treatment of miscarriages and dangerous ectopic pregnancies. For those who are pregnant or looking to start a family, we're making time for your questions. What changes to health care should we expect in a post-Roe world? That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, World of Beer Bar and Kitchen is opening a new location in Jacksonville this week, marking the company's official return to the area. Now, keep listening. In a moment, we've got some gift certificates to give away to the new spot. Keep listening for the details on that. But first, franchise owner Jason Frimmel is on the line to tell us more about the grand opening. Hey, Jason.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good to talk to you. So people in this town loved craft beer. World of Beer is seen as the original purveyor of the craft beer experience. So what is bringing you guys back to town?
Well, we have a location in Tallahassee that we started up with our group that's been open for almost 2 years. We are very interested in entering the Jacksonville market because it's close to our footprint, a city that we truly love and enjoy through many visits. And we're a little bit connected in the community, which is fantastic as well. There's a great craft beer presence in the Jacksonville community, and we're looking to enhance that. We like to partner up with our local breweries. That's part of the backbone of the city for some things, and we look forward to supporting all of those folks, along with having our worldly beers.
Now,
we also have the...
Go ahead.
Well, we also have a bunch of different... liquor options. We're going to have probably 120 to 140 different options there, 12 to 15 wines. We'll have a whole bunch of food, burgers, tacos, wings, steaks, desserts, salads. And then, of course, we've got the Topgolf swing suites as well.
Yeah, now tell us about the Topgolf piece of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two suites that we have. It's a private area mostly. They're booked online. They can do 1, 2, 3, 4 hour segments, and we also do walk-in reservations as well, as long as the books are the stays are not pre-reserved. Food is allowed, beverages allowed, everything that we have in the restaurant is able to be served in the Topgolf swing suites areas, and it's got all the games that you would normally play on a normal Topgolf with the top contender and the top pressure. It also has zombie dodgeball, hockey slap shot, baseball pitching, soccer. There's a football quarterback challenge game as well. And there's just something for everybody. There's also 86 preloaded golf courses. And there are a lot of the really major golf courses that many folks don't have the opportunity to play on a routine basis. There's also a driving range that's incorporated into the system as well.
Now, you guys are pet friendly as well on the patio. Is that right?
Absolutely. We love our pets.
So that's a selling point. Where is the new World of Beer going to be located, and what time is the opening Wednesday?
We're at 5105 J. Turner Butler Boulevard, right on the area of JTB, Phillips Highway, and I-95, and we'll be opening at 11 o'clock sharp on Wednesday.
Okay. Now, if you're getting a little thirsty, thinking about the hundreds of beers, excited to check out the Topgolf and more. Guess what, folks? We have two $50 gift certificates to give away to the World of Beer Bar and Kitchen grand opening Wednesday at JTB and I-95. If you want to $50 gift certificate to the opening. Email us right now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and put beer in the subject line. We will select two winners at random and notify you so that you can go to the opening. People are getting ready to deal with the heat of summer, and they want cool drinks, and this is one new place you'll be able to get them. Anything else we should know about the opening, Jason?
Absolutely. We're giving away the first 100 customers are getting goodie bags, and we're working on adding another 100 to that batch as well because of the interest that we are seeing with our grand opening. So we will be opening at 11 o'clock. We'll be giving out some goodie bags, and there's one other really, really big surprise that I think I'm going to be able to pull off, but I can't announce it just yet.
So
folks can stay tuned on our social media channels when I can officially announce that.
Well, have fun this week, and the emails are already rolling in, so we will pick two winners later today. Jason Frimmel, it's World of Beer Bar and Kitchen, opening Wednesday at JTB and I-95. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to senior producer Heather Schatz, associate producer Catherine Hobbs, and director Josh Torres. Also, thanks to editorial director Jessica Palumbo, news editor Randy Roguski, and the entire WJCT News team. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. In the meantime, make it a great Monday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.